This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14. Get tickets now.
Welcome back to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and Mr. Taylor, whose writings on the industry you can regularly read over on The Wrap, and whose musings on the Mission Impossible movies you can listen to on Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, he and I are recording this week's show on Friday, May 10th, 2024. And as Drew always does, he sends me a list of possible news topics to, you know, discuss with this week's show. And I have to say, Drew, it was hard to decide which cat-related project we should discuss at the very top of the show, because that trailer you shared for Exploding Kittens, the new animated series from Mike Judd and Greg Daniels, debuting on Netflix in July, that was something.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
I agree. I mean, incredibly blasphemous, but also really, really funny.
Yeah.
Just to give folks a little background here, this is based on the card game from Oatmeal, and the show description goes this way. Earth sucks. So God gets fired and then sent to Earth, where he now has to reconnect with humanity. The catch... God's now trapped in the body of a chubby house cat, which is why the Almighty is now known as God Cat. And just a quick aside here, Drew, every single cat that I've ever owned already thinks of themselves as the Almighty, you know, just sort of like, bow down before me, human, and while you're at it, open a new can of Fancy Feast, the one with chicken and cheese, and while you're at it, go scoop my poop. Just, Nova wouldn't do that. Nova is a sweet, good, kind
dog. Yeah, I talked to John Waters many years ago, and I asked him if he had a pet, and he said no, because he said, being a pet owner is like being a bottom, because you have to... You are totally at the disposal of the animal, which is basically what you're getting into. Yeah.
Wow. That is a very apt description. Yes. Okay. All right. Pick it up with the show description for Exploding Kittens. As part of his rehabilitation, Godcat moves in with a dysfunctional family and tries to solve their problems, but he spends up spending a lot of his time chasing laser pointers. And to top it off, Godcat's next door neighbor, who is also a cat, turns out to be none other than his nemesis, the Antichrist. And so the show is now set up as the ultimate battle between good and evil, except God Cat is distracted by a pigeon he saw in the yard, and Devil Cat is busy snapping on someone's laptop. So I have to admit, I really enjoyed this trailer. Thanks for pushing it my way.
Yeah.
Though you kind of doubled up on cats this week, because you have seen Garfield.
I have seen Garfield. I don't know if I'm embargoed or not, but I have seen Garfield, yes.
Okay. All right. So we'll tell you what. We'll carefully pick around this, because there's a lot to share. Sure, but there's a lasagna-loving cat, but we'll do that in the news portion of the show. But before we do that, Mr. Taylor and I would like to remind you that the news portion of Fine Tuning is brought to you by Touring Plans. And if you're planning a trip to Central Florida so that you can then experience some of the theme parks you'll find around the City Beautiful, you really need to go check out touringplans.com. The smart folks who run that site can share all sorts of winning strategies with you when it comes to those theme parks that will definitely save you time and money. So please check them out at touringplans.com. Tom, and you can thank Mr. Taylor and I later. All right. So we were just talking about the Garfield movie, which doesn't open stateside till Friday, May 24th. And that's largely because of the long Memorial Day weekend, right?
Yeah.
That's the thinking, because this thing is already open overseas. This past weekend, this Mark Dindal movie. And by the way, folks, not the first time that Mark has done a film built around felines. 1997's Cats Don't Dance. If you haven't seen this one and only animated feature to ever come out of Turner Feature Animation, it's a flat-out delight. It's great Valentine to old Hollywood, and also has, you know, some of the greatest movie villains ever. I mean, yeah, Darla Dimple, who's basically this evil Shirley Temple, who's then aided and abetted by her King Kong-sized butler and valet Max, who, by the way, Mark voiced Max in Cats Don't Dance.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not know that either, just till researching tonight's show. But anyway, it kind of broke my heart that Cats Don't Dance, when it came out into theaters in March of 97, nobody went to it. I mean, it cost $32 million to make. And I think after 3 and 4 weeks in stateside theaters, it had only sold 3.5 million worth of tickets. But the interesting thing is the folks at Disney saw Cats Don't Dance and immediately recognized that whoever was directing this movie was a huge new talent. So they brought Mark over to the Mouse House, and he was part of the team that salvaged Kingdom in the Sun, Kingdom of the Sun, and turned that Prince of the Pauper set back in the Incas thing into the Emperor's New Groove that then came out in December of 2000. And then Mark arrived at Disney at a weird time, right? I mean, this was when Disney and Pixar were on the outs, and didn't look like that deal was going to get renewed. And so Pixar was going to become Disney's competition. And so Disney decided they needed to get out of hand-drawn, and they got into CG. And that's how Mark wound up directing the first all CG movie for Disney, Chicken Little, right?
Yes, which was a notoriously difficult production and was second-guessed by all sorts of executives. And
yeah,
Chicken Little was a girl. Chicken Little was a boy. Chicken Little was in 3D now. Chicken Little, you know, it was a lot.
But, you know, again, I remember talking with Penn Jillette about this back when, you know, it was Holly Hunter who was the voice of Chicken Little. And because she had said the sky was falling, she was sent away to summer camp. And Penn Jillette was the guy in charge of the camp, only he was so clearly a wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, the whole thing was they were going to spend the summer fattening up all these kids and then eat them. And I don't know, you kind of felt for Mark, and I especially felt for Mark because it was like after Chicken Little came out in 2005, it's now almost been two decades since he's been allowed to direct a feature. And but it's a triumphant return, right? You don't have to give any plot points, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, yes? I enjoyed it, and I was on the phone with Mark earlier today, and he is very excited about this.
Good.
He cannot believe that it is, you know, his first movie in almost 20 years. But yeah, I mean, he was attached to a bunch of projects that just fell apart for whatever reason, and he said he turned around and realized how long it had been. You know, he was one of the first directors on Me and My Shadow at DreamWorks and a lot of other projects that nearly happened. So, you know, as my buddy Christopher McQuarrie always says, mm-hmm. he goes through the door that opens. And that is certainly the case with Garfield. It was a movie that he knew he could make and get out there. And, you know, his writing partner, Reynolds, right?
Yep.
Who worked on Emperor's New Groove is back. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of the same humor and, you know, and the animation by Dean Egg is really great. So, yeah.
Well, but now speaking of which, that was your other bit of news, that the irony of that here they did such wonderful work on this movie, and yet we got layoffs on there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's in specific divisions. I don't know how much animation is actually affected, but yeah, it's quite a bummer because they are great.
And I'm sorry. I mean, I get that's how the industry is now. It's the whole visual effects footing, in that you staff up for when you're actually making the movie, and then you let everybody go except a small team. But anyway, well, at least so far, it looks promising for Garfield. Again, as we just mentioned, Garfield has already opened in eight international territories this past Friday, May 3rd. Off to a strong start, 22 million in international ticket sales, especially popular in Spain, Brazil, and Italy. And come on, Italy's kind of a gimme, you know, given the Garfield's love of lasagna. And what's interesting, folks, is because I am old, I remember when there was no Garfield. I remember when the comic strip Jim Davis created made its syndicated debut back in June of 78. And then, I mean, it moved fast, Drew, that the first Garfield book, Garfield at Large, Garfield at Large, it hit store shelves in February of 1980 and then stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for 2 years. And 1-2 punch of continuing success of the comic strip and then the book that collected the first 2 years of strips, Hollywood comes calling. And the first Garfield animated special, Here Comes Garfield, debuts on CBS in October of 82. And that animated special is so popular, nominated for an Emmy, that CBS orders a whole bunch. Ultimately, 12 are made between 1982 and 1991. There was also the Garfield and Friends animated series, which CBS added to its Saturday morning lineup in September of 88 and continued through December of 94. And then after that, 10 years later, we got Garfield the movie, which was a live-action CG with Bill Murray as the voice of the Tubby Tabby. And that was successful enough that 2 years after that, June of 2006, we get a sequel, Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. Then 2 years after that, 2008, Garfield returns to television with The Garfield Show. This time around, not hand-drawn, CG, runs for 5 seasons. And last show for that, or the last episode of that show, aired in the U.S. market back in October of 2016. And not long after that, I want to say in 2019, it was announced that the Garfield movie was in development. And did Mark talk about when he came on board? I mean, how long?
Yeah, he's been on it for a while, but he said some of the people that he worked with, he won't even meet until the premiere.
Wow.
Because the whole thing was done during COVID, basically.
Oh my God,
so,
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, yeah. So they finished the movie about 2 months ago.
Okay.
And yeah, and here it is. Here it's coming down the pike.
Yep. Now, I that said, it will face a little bit of competition because we've got If, also known as Imaginary Friends, opening on May 17th. This is a basically a live action film with a lot of CG, and the log line here is a young girl goes through a difficult experience but begins to see everyone's imaginary friends who have been left behind when their real life friends have grown up, and the girl decides that she wants to now reunite these creatures with their kids. And have we seen this one as well, or
I have not. I'm seeing it early next week. Okay. But at CinemaCon last year, they had a clip of John Krasinski who explained it as a live-action Pixar movie, and you can definitely see that in the character design and in the fact that Michael Giacchino is doing the music and all of that. Yeah,
And I have to say, you get that in one when you watch this. And by the way, when we say live-action Pixar film, that's a compliment, folks. On the other hand, I remember when the folks at the Jim Henson Company, what they said when they saw Pixar's Monsters, Inc., right after it had been released to theaters in November of 2001, and that they said, that's the best Muppet movie we never made, which was not a compliment. In fact, I remember the Henson family being kind of pissed with Frank Oz because he had voiced Fungus, the Randall's assistant in this movie.
Oh, why were they so annoyed?
Well,
let's unpack that.
Actually, this was an interesting time for Frank Oz and Henson. I mean, for example, there was the Muppets from Space movie. And the thing is that Frank was so busy shooting Bowfinger that it was like, for the first time ever, it was like, I can't puppeteer Piggy or Fozzie. But tell you what, when you're in post, I will come in and do the voice. But it was just one of these things where it's like Frank is stepping away from the Muppets, and the Henson family wasn't happy. And to then have them make such an obvious, I mean, again, if you look at Monsters, Inc., back in the day, you could see Jim Henson doing that as a movie.
Oh, yeah.
With puppets.
Yeah.
And it just, it felt like these guys are working our side of the street. This is a movie that Henson should have made, and Frank's doing a voice for it. And it was just it did not make the Henson family happy. So, also worth noting about Monsters, Inc., Pete Docter, the current head of chief creative officer, Pixar Animation Studios, he made his feature film debut, directorial debut on Monsters, Inc., and his co-directors were Lee Unkrich and David Silverman. And David, a longtime director of The Simpsons TV show, also directed The Simpsons movie back in 2007. And since 2012, Silverman has specialized in producing these Simpsons shorts. You remember the first one, Drew, the Longest Daycare. That one, I want to say, came out in 2012, actually got nominated for Best Animated Short that year. His latest Simpsons short, May the 12th Be With You, just debuted on Disney Plus earlier today. And we'll discuss that short on the second half of today's show. Plus, Drew will share his thoughts about what Bob Iger had to say when it comes to Disney and Pixar animation at the most recent earnings call. But first, this. And we're back. Just a little bit more Garfield-related news before we get to May the 12th. Drew, it always fascinates me about how studios decide to promote their motion pictures, who they decide to partner with. And did you see this thing that Paramount's doing for Garfield? What Sony is doing for Garfield. Stay in a Garfield room at select Motel 6 locations for a limited time.
Yeah, they were desperately trying to get me to do something about this promotion. And I was just like, I don't know. I don't really understand this. I don't know if I have the time to talk about, because Garfield is also, I think, their first pet ambassador character as well.
Okay.
But did you see the other promotional tie-in with Garfield? Mm-hmm. It's the first time that Olive Garden has ever done a movie tie-in before.
Oh, that's
which
perfect.
Is kind of perfect.
No, that is kind of perfect. But also, just to be honest here, I get why they're after you to come take a look at the Garfield room, because it's at the Motel 6 Hollywood. And in fact,
that's where people go and to get murdered, I think. But we could go over there and check out the Garfield room.
Well, I just want to tell you in advance here that it's got fuzzy walls, orange furnishings, and other Garfield inspired touches. And mind you, it's very short lived, Drew. It's only May 21st through mid June. And by the way, it's going to cost you $150 a night.
Well, thankfully, the guy at the front desk is a big fan of taxidermy, and he'll share his candy corn with you if you ask nicely.
Okay. This took a very strange turn all of a sudden. Okay, there we go. All right. And more to the point, executives of Sony are probably very happy that come Memorial Day weekend, Poe will officially be off the field. And by the way, Did you see the latest news about Kung Fu Panda 4? It has officially crossed the $500 million mark at the global box office. I want to say, as of right now, they've sold $185 million worth of tickets stateside, $324 million overseas, with a worldwide box office total of $509 million, which is just $1 million shy of what Kung Fu Panda 3 made back in 2016. So, I mean, I know we have to allow for inflation, so it's not exactly the same amount, but they have to be happy with that, especially on the heels of the news coming out. It's not from Disney, it's from other folks about how much Wish supposedly lost past holiday season. So,
yeah.
How did that lose $130 million?
It was a very expensive movie, Jim. I know you recently saw it, so I wanted you to get your on-the-record comments on this movie.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, the villain, the Chris Pine voiced villain, I thought he worked. You know, I mean, he was fun, he was enjoyable to watch, and the star character and what is it, Valentino, the goat character voiced by Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
But after that, I mean, the look was nice, but Drew, there wasn't really a movie here, was there?
Well, I don't know. I think that the main character was a problem. She just didn't have a lot of motivation. Okay. And I don't know. We will be puzzling over this for years. I feel like something like Strange World, which is sort of admirable in its weirdness, you can kind of look at it and say, okay, this is what people weren't connecting with. But with Wish, it seemed like it had all the elements that would have made it a big hit. So, you know.
It did, but it just, but at the same time, there were, the storytelling was so strange. I mean, for example, I think you and I were talking about the end of the movie where Asha is talking with the townspeople, and then suddenly she's like, oh, and is talking with the star character who makes a sad face. And it's like, oh, we're connected. And so I sense that you have to leave now. And the little star shakes its head. But then Asha says, but not right away. So things are good. And so, wait a minute. You were literally having an emotional beat at the end of the movie, and you backed away from it. I mean, and so often, so many of the choices put me at a distance from the movie. I mean, literally, when the Snow White stand-in and her seven friends, I actually kind of pulled out of the movie at that point and was like, all right, so that one's happy and he's sleepy. Right. And it's like, there were so many moments when I got pushed out of the movie rather than drawn in.
Yeah. There's also the plot is just a little too complicated with the mechanics of the wish.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you wish and then he takes it and then he grants one wish years later it was tough to figure out.
But Chris Pine had a lot of fun voicing that villain, and there was a lot of great animation whenever he was on screen. But I mean, in a weird sort of way, it reminded me of Disney movies of the 1970s, where as often as not, the villain was great. The villain was memorable. And the hero was just flabby, weak, not memorable. And so, but again, to circle back to, they lose $130 million. On this movie. And so let's now talk about, it's a couple of months after that, and Mr. Iger is now on this week's investors call and talking about what Disney is planning next. Do you want to share what he had to say to the investment community?
Sure, because I was up at 5 there o'clock we go. In the morning to listen to this.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah. He said, we're going to balance sequels with originals, particularly in animation. We had gone through a period where our original films in animation, both at Disney and Pixar, were dominating. We're now swinging back a bit to lean on sequels. And so we've talked, as you know, about Toy Story and obviously Inside Out this summer. I just think that right now, given the competition in the overall movie marketplace, that actually there's a lot of value in the sequels because they're known and it takes less in terms of marketing. Talk about grim, Jim. Good grief.
Though, I what's interesting is this comment, and I don't know if you saw the gentleman from Marvel who was talking last week about, for example, what they'd learned at Marvel, the effect of with their last three films not connecting with audiences and with the limited series not hitting the way they were supposed to. And what's interesting to me is they were literally talking about how with Wolverine and Deadpool that you don't have to know anything to be able to appreciate this movie. You can walk into the theater cold. You know, you don't have to have watched Loki or the Marvels or whatever to understand what's going on in the story. And if anything, they talked about we felt like a little bloodied after what happened with the last couple of weeks. We learned a lesson. We're getting back to what we should be doing. So, and speaking of getting back, let's get back now to The Simpsons. May the 12th be with you. And now we mentioned that David Silverman has directed a bunch of these, but on today's show, folks, we're going to concentrate on the seven of these Simpsons shorts that have been produced to date for Disney Plus. And now you got to see the Force Awakens from its nap. This was back. In fact, this was done as a May the 4th thing in 2001 for Star Wars Day, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then there was Plusiversary in November 12th of that same year, which was done to commemorate the second anniversary of the launch of Disney Plus, which I thought was cute. I mean, it was all the characters hanging out in Moe's Tavern, and though it was kind of disappointing that they had Homer interacting with Goofy, and they didn't bring in Bill Farmer to do the voice.
It's a weird, I don't know what's going, like, they only use like two or three people per short. It's sort of interesting, and mm-hmm. Do you know why mm-hmm. that is? Is it?
I don't. But I. What was especially interesting is that it was Julie Kavner, and dang it, I am blanking his name. The voice of Homer,
Dan Castellaneta.
There we go. But they also gave a special voice credit to Maurice LaMarche, and then of course Seth MacFarlane, who actually showed up to voice Stewie, which was kind of cool. But
yeah.
But again, all of these have been done, you know, directed by David Silverman, and last year, September 2022, we got Welcome to the Club, which was kind of fun because it was the Disney villains trying to recruit Lisa, and then we got another Star Wars themed one, Rogue Almost won. And so I have to ask, what did you think of May the 12th?
I thought it was fine, although you said that there were Onward references and I did not see them.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I'm sorry. I whenever Onward is touched on in any way, I always, hey Drew, hey. But what's interesting is there are a couple of scenes with Ian and Barley. You can definitely see them in the crowd, and they even bring their mom Laurel in. And by the way, I also want to bring this up, Drew. Have you seen what's going on at Pixar Fest with Onward?
I saw that they're there with the van, which I think
they are.
I think that's the first time they've been out since there was like a pre-pandemic Pixar night or something that they were out, and they were at the premiere. But that was, I think, it. This is the first time they've ever done it.
I am sorry. And speaking of doing it, you have to go down to the park with your art of book and get your picture taken with
that would be good.
I agree. Yeah. I, you know, that would be so cool. And by the way, folks, just in case you don't know, Drew wrote the Art of Onward book for Chronicle Books. A lovely volume. You really have to get a copy. And while we're plugging Chronicle Books thing, the Art of Inside Out 2 just came out. So,
oh, really? Interesting. Yep. I don't have my copy yet, Jim, and you know how protective I am of my Art of books.
I am patiently waiting as well. You know, the Drew, you know, walk out to the mailbox. So, all right. Anyway, but yeah, that they. What's interesting is they do a lot of the Disney, the modern moms. I mean, for example, you get Anna, Elsa, and Queen Aduna. Who, by the way, another thing I didn't know. Did you know she's voiced by Jennifer Lee? Like the Jennifer Lee?
No, I didn't know. I mean, I might have been told that, Jim, in a press release or
okay.
something.
Okay, all right.
But yeah.
I never flashed on that. It's like, oh, okay. Likewise, Miguel and his evidently always pregnant mama from Coco is there in the crowd scenes. And let's see, who else? May Lee and her mom Ming from Turning Red, they're also there. But
did you notice the fire people from Elemental?
I did.
As well?
I did. In fact, there's a moment where I'm blanking the name of the female lead character, but she's roasting a hot dog on her mom's head. So. I mean, that they had a lot of fun with this. And in fact, one of the funnier moments, there's the, what is it, the ice cream stand that has 31,000 flavors.
Yes.
And among the flavors, Drew, we have chocolate Chippendale, berry poppins, the Mangalorian, let's see, Wookiees and cream, I am Groot beer. And again, you got to get the vomit jokes in there. So Wreck-It, then Ralph. And but again, Goofy standing in front of this display and can't decide what to get, and he decides to get Copyright Crunch. So
that's right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I thought overall they again, it was yet another fun short from David Silverman, and the title cards at the end were likewise a lot of fun. They had the Evil Queen from Snow White, Lady Tremaine from Cinderella, and Mother Gothel from Tangled outside picketing the Simpsons house because they hadn't been invited to the party, and they had signs that said Disney unfair to stepmothers. But yeah, there was a moment at the very front of the short where I guess a car backfired and Bambi's mom gave up Bambi in a heartbeat. It's like, oh no, not again. Take Bambi, not me. So, before I forget, we were just talking about Mei Li and her Ling and her mom Ming. It was a hugely popular meet and greet that was done for Chinese New Year at DCA. And in fact, they evidently, Drew, they got so many comments from people who came back to the park and said, hey, where's the Turning Red meet and greet? That they brought it back. And in fact, it's going to be at DCA through August 4th of this year. So I thought that was
who
cool.
Decided to have the characters from Luca be in their human form? That is but you know what's fun is in the parade, they're kind of half submerged, and the bottom half is the monster half, and their human half is outside of this kind of fake. Yeah.
Which
is kind of cute.
I haven't watched. That's in the parade, or?
Yeah, that's in the parade.
Dang.
But I thought it was weird that they were in their human form.
How weird.
In their meet and greet. I don't know.
Okay.
I want to meet the monster versions, Jim. But I get it. We're outside of land.
Yeah.
Outside the water.
I get it. But the Pixar Fest, just that meet and greet here, looks amazing. But again, you've got to go to the park. You got to go with your book.
You're right.
Okay. One final note here, folks, before we close. I want to mention Bill's Benefit, which is being held on May 22nd at the Bedford Playhouse in Bedford, New York. And this is to help celebrate Bill Plimpton's brand new animated film, Slide. And evidently, after the screening, there'll be a panel on creativity, art, animation with Bill and some very special guests. There will also be artwork from the new film on sale there at the Bedford Playhouse. To bring it all full circle here, also art from the do you remember the couch gag that Bill Plimpton did?
Yeah, of course.
The Simpsons, that they're going to have artwork on display there. Likewise, artwork from his Oscar-nominated short, Your Face. I'm halfway considering getting in the car and driving down for this. Just I would love to see the new movie and love to see Bill Plimpton's art and get right there in the raw. And
this is a feature length movie, right?
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Anyway, apologies, folks. We ran out of time this week. We didn't get to talk about the new Big Cities Green trailer, or for that matter, the new Despicable Me 4 trailer, which, Drew, I think you mentioned lots and lots and lots of minions.
A lot of minions, Jim. Mm. They're transforming. They're becoming mega minions. They have superpowers. Mm-hmm. One looks like a cone head.
Yeah.
Boy, they love making the minions something else besides minions. Remember when they were evil? They were purple.
Yeah.
There was one that was about that. These movies have blended together in my mind in just a minion soup, Jim. It is yellow, and it is. Have you been watching the John Mulaney specials this week?
That you had mentioned the one about coyotes, and there didn't one just drop about OJ?
One was about, it was about helicopters.
Helicopters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then there was one last night about earthquakes, which was just great.
Okay.
They do a match cut from the minion on top of Universal to like a sunset.
Oh.
And it's one of the, I mean, when the opening credits to a show has footage from the place where I get the car washed, that's when you know I have a real connection with this thing. Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to watch it, Jim. Tonight's the last one.
Oh, okay.
You
know? Okay. I've been good this week. I've earned a treat. So
yes.
I'm going to go watch the Mulaney thing now. So, again, if you are looking for a treat, folks, seriously, Light Diffuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, which Drew does with his very talented co-host, Charles Hood. It's so much fun. You learn so much about how movies are really made from the people who actually have either directed or done below-the-line stuff on your favorite films. And you're continuing your Paramount Directors series right now, right?
Yeah. I think this week is Alexander Payne Part 2. We've got Dan Trachtenberg coming up, who did 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said last week, we got Sean S. Cunningham to tell some fun stories about the first Friday the 13th. And I also want to remind people that you can pre-order The Art of Amphibia right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pre-order The Art of Ultraman sometime soon. But it is coming out, I swear.
Cool.
I just want to remind people of that as well.
All right. And again, if you're there and you need to fill out that Amazon, your cart.
The cart.
There is that lovely Art of Onward book, which
you can always pick that up.
There we go. And all right, speaking of other podcasts, we have a few here at Jim Hill Media we'd like you to check out. We got Disney Dish that I do with Len Testa. Just last night, I recorded a brand new Looking at Lucasfilm with Brian Gunn. Oh, by the way, Drew, Brian wanted me to tell you that you asked for the Starspeeder 1000 and he got you one. So,
Oh my gosh.
So we'll need to get
you clearly. And maybe he can go take a picture with the Art of Onward book.
There's an idea. Yeah. All right. This is a man who makes trips to Anaheim. Okay. Let's see what else. Oh, and the day before that, Eric Hersey, the gentleman who produces and edits a lot of the podcasts here, he and I did a brand new episode of the Epic Universal podcast. And let's see, his bride and I, the lovely Lauren Hersey, will be recording a brand new episode of I Want That Too. And also worth mentioning that we're about to get the podcast that Noah Valladolid and his lovely bride Shelley have done. It's called Manufacturing the Magic. It's about the history of theme parks and how they came about. That's going to be the first time ever we have a produced in association with Jim Hill Media. So that's going to be showing up.
Wow, the sun never sets on the Jim Hill Media empire. That's what I always say.
Yes, all five. It's the sun. It's like the, what is it? The true crime thing. on
what's your crime thing?
The thing with Jodie Foster that was set.
Oh, True Detective.
True Detective. Yeah. That because of the irony of that, that was set during the time, you know, the 2 week period where the sun never came up. So I'm just trying to be funny and clever and blew it. Okay. Anyway, also worth noting here, our newest project, the Disney Unpacked first ever video series, producing in collaboration with Jim Shull. We've got this month's show is about the stunt shows at the Disney parks. It's a lot of fun. And I guess that's going to do it for now, Drew. So let's talk social media. I still see you on X, right?
Yes, I'm occasionally on X. Okay. And on other things too, at Drew Tailored, mm-hmm. like a tailored shirt. Mm-hmm. You can see what shows I'm going to as part of this Netflix is a joke mm-hmm. festival. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the I Think You Should Leave show on Saturday, Jim. I don't know if you've watched that show on Netflix. It is absolutely bizarre, but the funniest thing you'll ever see. So put it on the list.
I got a lot of stuff to watch tonight. I'm also still on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. And one final favor as Drew and I head out the door here, folks, if you could go over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, well, not just the podcast you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. That's helpful. You know, it helps other people discover the shows and that sort of thing. And all right, I guess that's going to do it for this week. So on behalf of Mr. Taylor, thank you for listening. And until next time, take care.